Ah!
Did you really believe I did not see it, youngling? You are of no further use.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard.
And I'm Eric.
And I'm Jonathan.
And this is Star Wars TV Cast.
This week we're covering Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 5.
Only one more to go. But I'm excited now.
Super excited. It's really getting there now. Very happy.
Right, I was wondering how you're going to feel about that.
Yeah, and instead of the Star Wars question of the week this week, we'll be talking to my friend Taksakan Doyeni, who was one of the Jedi in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, so stay tuned to the end of the podcast for that.
Yeah, that was hecka cool.
Yeah. That was good fun to record, so stay through to the end.
So what'd you guys think, in general? What were your impressions of Part 5, Eric?
Anytime, and I think I told you this already, but anytime you get to see Vader being Vader, I mean, it's weird to almost say that because I feel like his moments have just come recently. You know, yeah. I mean, we've always seen him as this ominous figure. But when you really see him get to let loose and see how powerful he is, it's just awesome. So, yeah. I mean, that alone made the episode really super cool.
I know. I think it feels like we finally got some of what we were wanting, what we were waiting for, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It might have taken a little bit too long for me, but we definitely got there.
Right.
Yeah, but with only two episodes to go, I was still worried, that it wouldn't hit the heights I was hoping for. But I thought this was the best episode by far and gave me such great Star Wars feelings. You know, all the nitpicks I have can just be overlooked, and I just sat back and enjoyed all the Star Wars goodness. You know, I think it was when that ship came out of hyperspace at the beginning and I just shouted, yes, sitting alone watching the show at home alone. So I'm very happy, very excited.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me make clear that whatever is said during this podcast, whatever opinions, wants, needs, hopes, and dreams that we express here will not convince me of anything other than this was the best episode of the entire series. I'm telling you, man, it was awesome. We got all the bombshells that were dropped towards the end.
I know, cow. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd been throwing around these theories and everything was laid out on the table, so we know. Hopefully that means for an awesome finale.
Yeah. All right, well, shall we get into our takes on this? What was your first point, Eric?
Let's see. I kind of feel that we're all going to have the similar points.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we're all huge fans of Vader being Vader and all that.
Yeah.
But I put down my first one as Reva, you know, revealing, you know, her whole backstory.
Mm.
And, you know, we kind of knew that there was something up. We kind of knew that there was more to her than meets the eye. And even knowing that, I felt like it was pretty powerful and emotional, and you felt her disappointment, you know, when Obi-Wan realizes that she was a youngling and what she had to do, and it makes sense, you know, it makes sense why she's so angry. It makes sense why she, you know, wants to take Vader out and that she doesn't trust Obi-Wan. And there was just so much to that, and I thought it was cool. You know, it mirrored
some powerful words in there,
right? It mirrored Anakin, and you can see how you know feelings and hatred and anger can push you in a certain direction, even if you have noble thoughts or noble intentions. So I thought that was super powerful. What'd you guys think?
Look, I thought her character, her acting, her presence in this was just so much better, and she finally came into her own as a character, and I think she's a great character, and all the motivations we've been kind of speculating on, and like the opening scene at when Order 66 went down. Look, I just think the her arc rounded out, and it all made sense, and was all very satisfying. And then the her duel with Vader. Can we jump to that yet?
Oh my gosh!
I think we're going to all just speak about. I think there's just with Vader in the prequel duel. I think that's what the whole thing's going to be about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but she did have an odd style. I thought there was a bit of rolling around on the floor with the lightsaber, and but that scene was amazing. But so yeah, I think Reva has really come into her own as a character.
Yeah, I felt the same. I know some of our listeners suspected from the very beginning that she had some ulterior motives, why she was doing what she's doing. I know I did. And then,
yeah, I think we both had mentioned it at one point. I think I mentioned it on the one where you weren't on, and then you mentioned it the one that I wasn't on. And we weren't talking, by the way. We were, these are all independents.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we try to avoid talking about it. Yeah, so, but like you said, even though we suspected all of this, right, when it happened, it was like, oh, wow. It was pretty powerful,
Very satisfying.
Yeah, she hates Kenobi. She blames Kenobi for everything that's wrong in her life and everything that she's doing now. She says, why didn't you stop him? Why didn't you save us? And it's like, yeah, she's got a point.
I've been thinking, because I remember that was he just too far away when it happened?
He was trying to, he wasn't just, lollygagging. He was trying to end the war. He was actually, he was trying to do something, but, he just couldn't be in two places at once.
Right. Mm. But what tugs on the heartstrings is that it's not just physically, why didn't he stop him? She blamed him for, failing as a mentor. And a master to
Obi or to Anakin.
To Anakin, so she blames him for Order 66. She blames him for the Clone Wars. She blames him for everything because he didn't see that Anakin was going to turn towards the dark side, And she's kind of got a point.
Right. And, it was still cool that even after that, you could hear the hatred. You could hear, her disappointment. But there was still a little bit of that Jedi in there that I felt was contemplating about joining. I think she had, the anger kind of overwhelmed her, but I don't know. I felt like she did contemplate, joining forces for a second there.
Well, when they're at the blast
at the door.
And there's that moment where she just pauses, and beautiful acting, we'll say. Yeah. Like, it's been a bit over the top for me, all the yelling and everything,
right.
but there was subtlety in this one, and I think it was better written in that moment when she pauses and you're like, oh, is she going to flip or is she not? But when she said that the Jedi were her family, and so when you're betrayed by your family, as a child, then how do you even reconcile whether he was there or not? He was just like, they all failed, the Jedi Order, the Jedi's individually, and especially Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I think too, like you said, like you guys are saying, that she was contemplating maybe for a minute there joining forces with Kenobi, but then he said something like, I can help you. And Reva was like, can you?
Yeah,
it's like, really? I mean, do you really want to kill Anakin?
Yeah.
And it's like, she's got another good point.
Yeah. Calling out on that one.
We know that as younglings, they're taken from their family. So I'm sure she was already, struggling with that and, as accepting, the Jedi way of life and, everything's going hunky-dory and she's learning the Force. And then all of a sudden, a complete massacre. And then on top of that, knowing that the people that did take you away from your original family you know, to put you in this, you know, this pseudo family that gets taken away. I mean, how could she not, you know, flip out?
Right. Yeah. When Kenobi was like at the door, how did they communicate through that big ass thick door? Were they using the Force? Was that what he was doing? Because he had his hand on it.
I kind of felt like there was some Force stuff going on because...
Yeah, I think they were feeling each other's presence because he was feeling for someone's presence and then she was there. And then I guess when that heavy gun kind of thinned out the door a little bit, they could hear through it because she did, you know, she pushed her lightsaber fairly easily through that thick glass door. Whereas we've seen with Qui-Gon Jinn, I think it was, they really pushed it through and it took a long time for it to actually cut through.
Move it around and
So I think there was hella cool.
Yeah. Although there was that scene last week where when they're in the dark and it just bounced off the stormtrooper's armor, which I thought was a little
like, wait a second here. I thought these things could chop limbs off.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a good scene. That was an all around good scene. Even Kenobi was, you know, the acting was really well done when he was sitting there at the door figuring it all out in his head and expressing it, you know, and he's like, oh, like, yeah, that's right. You were there and everyone was slaughtered. Everyone died. Yeah. And she's like, shut up. Now they were wasted. Shut up.
Yeah. She doesn't want to have to feel that again.
Yeah. But then you sort of like always, you know, thinking of Obi-Wan as a gentleman, but then he realizes he can manipulate her. And from his own devices and to save the others and everything. But he goes, you know, are you going to let it happen again? You know, there are children, there are families inside, there are children. Are you going to let them? She gives her pause. But all the time now we know that he was manipulating her as much as Vader was.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole entire episode. That's what everyone was doing. Everyone's manipulating everybody, trying to, you know, work against each other.
But we can go right into their lightsaber duel because
holy crap.
I mean, I know that was probably on all of our lists. I have a couple others, but I mean, when Rogue One came out and they added that, you know, scene of him just tearing through those fleet troopers. Oh my gosh, it was just...
Because that was an added scene, wasn't it? That wasn't in and they sort of, we need a little extra to add to this, and I feel it's almost the greatest scene of Disney Star Wars.
It made the movie that much better.
Yeah. It didn't. It almost didn't fit, but I didn't care one bit. I mean, one iota. It was just so cool to finally see him just kicking ass.
In the dark, when you're just watching it and you think, oh, this film's great, and then the darkness comes, and in the darkness the lightsaber ignites.
but then
they start fighting, and he is just swatting her away like a fly. It's just dismissive. She's threat to him.
Way out of his league.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we've ever seen that. You know, we've never seen anyone be able to, you know, force push a blade away or keep it from them. You know, we've seen some moments in the Clone Wars here and there where there were some, I think I mentioned this way back in one of the other podcasts about these, the people who created the Force, that they could actually grab the lightsaber and not even be affected.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Never like this. And it was just so cool. And it was like, so, what's the word I'm looking for? So like demeaning.
Yeah, it really
he doesn't even bother. He doesn't even bother to pull his lightsaber out. He's lightsaber, like, nope.
He's like, I'm going to slap you around a little bit.
Yeah. Right.
Dismissive waves of his hand, and she's trying everything she knows to even make contact or even kind of put him on the defensive. But that whole scene reminded me of like a Bruce Lee film where he's just like flowing like water and just countering everything without even thinking. You know, his focus was so pure that he was like four or five moves ahead of her.
Yeah, I think there was one point, I mean, where he didn't even bother turning around. She, you know, rolls behind him, and he just blocks her from the back.
Like he was training her. It's just like kind of half-assing it, you know? I was like, oh, okay.
It was like a training thing, which is a great thing, and we'll get to it later because I know we want to talk about it, but it mirrored the prequel duel, the training thing with Anakin and Obi-Wan. Lightsaber behind the back is a classic Anakin move.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed it in the duel, and then he comes back and he does it, but without a lightsaber.
Without a lightsaber.
Right. Yeah, upon like, you know, eighth watching of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I started, you know what, Jonathan, I thought about what you said last week, because it makes sense how he was fighting her in one, in that he wants to, like you said, Eric, demean her and show her like how far out of her league, you know, she is. But he also, he's in that giant suit, and so he's probably had to come up with, you know, a compromise in his fights, because last week you said, you know, he has kind of limited mobility, right? So it made a lot of sense in how he's doing that.
Yeah, well, I think I might be wrong with that theory, because he was pretty mobile in this one. But you're right, they were very short. It wasn't expansive or as acrobatic as he was in the prequels.
Right.
He's standing very very still and very straight, and just kind of blocking like a, you know, like an old you know, kung fu master.
Kung fu movie. Yeah. He was the white beard guy that was.
Yeah.
And just before this too, just before this fight, he walks into, you know, the landing bay there, and he just grabs a hold of the ship with the force.
That's amazing.
And brings it down, and I'm just like, this is beyond what we've seen before, you know? This is like superhero territory.
Right.
He really brings it down, rips chunks of it out.
Ripping it open.
Holy crap!
Yeah.
When he pulled the hull apart, you just could feel his anger.
And you hear him grunt. He's just like,
and the power. Yeah, and I thought he was just pulling off the door, but then he's literally tearing away the spaceship piece by piece, ripping metal with his bare hands. You know,
and then right after that, right, he's sitting there contemplating his mess up, because you know they got away in the dummy. And then Reva tries to stab him in the back, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
If there's a moment, right? If there's a moment to strike, that was definitely not it.
Yeah. Right. Number one, he's probably pissed, right?
Yeah.
But then you think about it, it's like, when else could you do something like
that's
that,
true.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
There is no good time to attack Vader.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it was interesting. Yeah. He's like, did you think that I didn't know about this the whole time?
Right.
You
all know? Along.
Yeah, and you know, so both were manipulating her, and he's like, I knew all about this. This is no surprise. I'm expecting it the whole time. So you never had a chance, and you just see her deflate and realize now the mortal danger that she's in.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point. That was no surprise either, because that's totally consistent with his character, right? He uses and abuses everyone under him, you know, all the underlings, the inquisitors, the troopers, the generals. He doesn't give a shit about none of them, and he lets them kill each other, you know. He only cares about getting Kenobi. And then later on, we see this again when he only cares about getting Luke. So he's totally single-minded.
Exactly right.
But again, you know, we've never seen this. You know, I mentioned it before that we've always known that he was a badass, but it's more than just being, being a lightsaber duelist. You know, I mean, he has like mastered the dark side. I mean, he rips that ship down. He is one step ahead of everyone. I mean, on top of being, you know, a swordsman, he's just Vader.
This is Vader at his full power, fully leveled up.
Yep. He has all the power-ups.
10 lightsaber.
I mean, he's probably using it as a training session for himself, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, that's exactly right.
What do you need? I'm beyond a lightsaber at this point. He's beyond blasters and weapons and lightsabers. He's just going to practice using the Force.
Yeah.
You know, and it does make the it just reminded me of like the scene when Han confronts him on Cloud City. You know, he just goes, no, and he just puts his hand up and blocks laser bolts with his hands, and then just
bolts.
Say, I'll give you your gun.
And that was so shocking when you saw it. You know, like he hand draws his pistol, and Vader just deflects blasters with his hand and the Force, and you're just like,
Because then you're like, well, you can't shoot him, so how do you defeat this guy?
So what do you do? Mm. Right, right.
Mm.
Do you know, it just reminded me of something, Eric. I'm starting to question the effectiveness of the lightsaber. I mean, how many times have we seen someone get stabbed with a lightsaber?
No, I know.
And they live.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of, they even cut, what's that guy, Darth Sidious?
Darth Maul.
Well, Darth Maul even cut him in half.
Show
it cutting the door in half, that big thick metal. Piece of metal, kind of minutes before. And it's got to leave a gaping hole, you know, in you, you know, the size of a...
And it's, a big giant hole that's cauterized. I mean,
cauterized. There you go.
Even if you're not bleeding out, you have a freaking hole in you.
Yeah, they're either going through the heart or you've lost a lung. Yeah. And she got stabbed twice because there's that beautiful scene.
Yeah, I know.
When she's getting stabbed, where they flash back and they layer it over when she obviously got stabbed by Vader as a child by Anakin, and now she's being stabbed again. So maybe she's got matching holes because, like, you can't. I don't even have the back to
maybe that's tank. It.
Yeah. Maybe he stabbed her in the same exact place. Yeah,
right, exactly.
No problem.
Yeah, she has some mechanics down there, and it's just the perfect, you know.
Yeah, it's like a Robin Hood thing where he splits
splits the arrow.
I think I watched that scene way too many times because I was like thinking, you got a lightsaber, dude. Why, you know, he's got perfect form. He goes straight in with it
straight
through
in.
Her abdomen and then straight back out. I'm like, you got a lightsaber. Like just yank it like this or cut her in half or something.
So, exactly.
But then again, that probably wouldn't matter either.
But then there was this, that point where she starts spinning her lightsaber and it's spinning and spinning. And she's thinking that she can defend with that. And he just slows it down.
Nope. Yeah. And he's walking towards her the whole time. Yeah. Like he's not even afraid.
No. Pulls her out of her hand and then snaps it in two. Reignites the lightsabers
and then
I'm
just
like
tosses
looking,
it to her. Here you go.
Well, I'm looking at him. He's got the two lightsabers in his hand. I thought he was going to behead Reva like he did to Dooku. I'm just sitting there. Huh? I'm watching it and I'm just like, do it. But unfortunately, didn't. But then it was great to he tosses her the lightsaber. He's just like, here, have it back. That's, you know.
When he did that, I immediately was like, oh, chick, you're dead.
Yeah, she's in trouble.
You're a goner. I mean, he's giving you a weapon. Pick it up so he can kill you.
Right. Hey, what do you do in that moment, right? I mean, someone throws you that, and you have to think, you know,
can I
really beat him?
Yeah. Maybe this was a mistake.
So you can't run away because we've just seen him
pull I guess you just have to go with it.
Yeah.
We've
just seen him pull down a spaceship.
Right.
and now this disappointingly brings me back to episode 2 when they were on the other side of the fire. And there was one single droid carrying Kenobi away, a couple of feet away, surely.
He could have just...
No nitpicks. This is Star Wars glory.
Right.
He does have lots of moments where he's just sitting there and staring off, and maybe he's just contemplating stuff. I don't know. Maybe he's got ADD.
Maybe he's getting a message in his... maybe there's a pop-up ad inside his helmet.
He's watching a video or something in there.
Exactly. But we may as well just, this is a different format because it was also awesome, I think.
Right.
But she's stabbed on the ground, and then we have the Grand Inquisitor make his return.
That's
walk
right.
Back in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was worried that they had messed the timeline up, and I'm sure a bunch of the other fans were because, you know, if you've watched Rebels, you know kind of what happens with his character, and I kept thinking, you know, they wouldn't do that.
No.
You know, I mean, I still feel like they're going to pull Ezra and some of the characters from Rebels back into, you know, some of these shows.
Yeah.
And I felt that maybe they couldn't if they were, you know, screwing with the timeline, but bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. Probably He's made back. A lot of people happy, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, I was glad to see him. And but the internet says that the explanation for his survival of his stabbing was that his species has two stomachs.
Oh,
and so that was how he there's the way that he might have survived.
Right.
Well, he's also got all that armor on, unlike Vader. So it could be he's part cyborg now.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I
was
mean,
before.
You know, it's like the Marvel universe. Nobody dies.
Nobody dies.
Darth Maul chopped in half. hands, limbs, legs.
Yeah. Everything.
Nobody's
below
come
the
back
chest.
From a head, right? Nobody's come back from just a head.
That's the only way to die.
Right.
I had forgotten that Count Dooku actually cut off Anakin's arm, right?
His arm, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before Kenobi really messed him up and cut off everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
But now I'm beginning to think that they sometimes accidentally have their lightsabers on stun. So
right.
Like I threw them, but it just tickles or something and makes them fall over.
Yeah, right. Blasters definitely seem to have a better kill ratio. I mean, you just shoot someone once and they're dead. You know, stab them as much as you want, cut them in half, and they're gonna live.
It depends on who's behind that blaster, because that was another little annoyance that we could maybe talk about or not.
Which one was that?
Yeah, the gates open up. There's like. How many stormtroopers and what are they doing? Shooting the ceiling? pew, pew, pew.
They did. A stormtrooper actually did kill somebody, but they were like within 3 feet of them.
3 feet.
Point blank range. It's like, you missed that, dude.
But that's it. I'm like, I know Obi-Wan's coming back, but there's no way he's defending a whole company of stormtroopers firing point blank into the rebels. No, there's no one is that quick. You know,
yeah, but there's like bolts going towards the
going everywhere.
Going everywhere.
Exactly.
Do you know how to aim that thing?
Yeah, those were the deflections.
Yeah,
but getting back to the Reva's duel with Vader. So the then there's Vader and the Grand Inquisitor just telling her she's nothing and we're going to leave you where we found you, in the gutter. And then as she's dying, she notices that the Obi-Wan's Jedi communicator. And another one of the things, I'm like, Obi-Wan, clear your history.
Yeah, I was going to say, there isn't like a delete. I mean, these are like the most important messages that he's ever going to receive in his life. You listen to it, and then you delete it.
Delete it.
Because it's not like in private window.
Yes. Right, exactly.
Use NordVPN, sponsor of this show.
That was pretty blatant, you know, the further the plot. But it does bring up some interesting questions or predictions, you know.
But then also Gana sending that message. Oh, I'm worried you're being captured. I hope they don't find out about Luke, who's with Owen on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Oh,
the boy. Right. I'm like, speaking in code, wink, wink.
Nudge, nudge.
But as they say, movie's got a movie, so, you know, we have to have the plot move forward somehow.
But aren't you curious now? I am.
Oh, yeah. Next week's going to be amazing.
You end on a wide shot, or I mean a close up shot of little Luke sleeping like a baby.
Luke.
It's like, come on, man.
And that goes back to us going, this is not about Luke anymore. It's all about Leia and then Reva, and you know what about Luke? Is Luke selling point? But then we come around, and hats off to the producers and the writers and everyone involved. They're now going to go after Luke, and so we'll come full circle, and Luke is important.
Yeah,
but you know, the realization of Obi-Wan when he felt the disturbance in the Force, when he knew that Luke was in danger.
Was in danger, yeah.
And you know that Vader can't be going to Tatooine, right?
No.
Because there's no way. He doesn't even know that Luke exists.
Yeah.
By the time we get to the first movie. So it's like, well, how are they going to, where's it going to go from here, you know?
Good. Or that we debated about Reva and her motivations. And this plays right into it, you know. Does she go to help protect Luke, or is she going to use that to get back into the good graces of Vader?
I'm thinking that maybe Kenobi's going to freak out, because he's already kind of freaking out, thinking, "Oh crap, I left that, or something's going on. I'm not sure what." But maybe he has to go intercept Reva or Vader at some point before, you know, they find out where Luke is, and then that's maybe when we'll get our. Hopefully,
it has to happen.
The final battle,
the rematch of the century.
It's like the Rancor. You know, I knew it was coming. It has to come. And next
and
week, Vader and Obi-Wan have to fight.
They have to.
My prediction, though, is that Reva, they both team up. I think they're going to team
up. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
We kind of have to. I mean, who's going to defeat Vader?
Yeah.
Right, they've been just amplifying his power so much that it would take both of them to do anything.
Yeah, so next week is exciting. So I'm back on board. I was a bit worried. Awesome. I was wavering for a while there, but now I'm back into full Star Wars territory.
I agree with you, though. It's been a slow burn.
Yeah.
I mean, five episodes.
I wish they hadn't have taken so long to get to this, you know? But here we are.
Yeah, that's what a lot of my friends are saying. They're like, this would have been great, like, maybe on the third episode or the second, even the second episode, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like it's been a theme, you know, with some of the, you know, with Boba Fett, it was a slow burn until we got to really see him doing his thing. And
until we got to the Luke episode.
Right. You mean the Mandalorian episode, yeah. But yeah, I feel like moving forward that they should listen to us and get on with it a little quicker.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
So what'd you guys think of the flashbacks? That was another one of my points. I really enjoyed them.
It was one of my points too, for sure.
Usually not a big fan of flashbacks, but these were really well done.
I think all three of us have got the same points,
exactly.
Because there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, totally.
You know, these flashbacks actually worked, right? Mm. They moved the story forward. They had a purpose. There wasn't it wasn't just to show what happened in the past. You know, we see Anakin training and being super aggressive way before we saw his change in the prequels,
and it mirrored what was happening in the show, because Vader was on top, when Anakin was on top in the duel, you know, we cut to Obi-Wan kind of remembering that, and then when Obi-Wan was on top, we cut to Darth Vader kind of staring out, and that was one of my favorite shots, was when Vader was staring out from the bridge of his starship into the hyperspace tunnel.
To the vortex of I actually had that down as a note. I was like, that was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, and there were so many of those moments, but the beautiful opening shot of Coruscant from the Jedi Palace training room, just to see that the lighting was so different. It was kind of clean and bright and blue, you know, and look, the de-aging worked very well on Obi-Wan, but I thought that Anakin could have starred in the Stranger Things season 5, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a 35-year-old teenager.
It was finally good.
Ooh, fast forward 20 years on their faces to film a flashback that happened 20 years ago. It's like, that's a little bit weird, but I got over it.
But again, I was just like, meh, it doesn't matter. Look at this lightsaber duel.
Yeah.
And we kept talking about how he was going to be, you know, introduced, or I mean, how he would actually play something other than a scarred up, masked Vader, and he's old.
Yeah. And the whole thing was beyond what I ever hoped for, and that's the sort of thing that Disney Star Wars sometimes does. Well, like with Luke coming up at the end of Mando, like this scene of them dueling was just such Star Wars goodness and unexpected and super satisfying. And just to watch them going at it and seeing some prequels magic was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the showing how Kenobi relies on those memories and those flashbacks to make his decisions in the present about, you know using Reva against Vader and using, you know, the dummy escape transport, because he knows Anakin's going to be focusing on just one thing with tunnel vision. But then the other part, too, is that Anakin had flashbacks, too. You see from his perspective, Anakin remembers his impatience with his master, because he's like, you know, I'm more powerful than you. I want to win, you know, in his mind, how Kenobi is holding him back. And what does he say? Something like, you know, mercy, show no mercy. No, that was... Oh, Cobra Kai. Mercy doesn't defeat an enemy or something like that.
Right, right.
And it's like, show no mercy. So what if Kreese was Anakin's master? What if Karate Kid was Anakin's master? Holy crap, we'd have a whole new show, huh?
There was some duality between the two, I think. Absolutely. But I just saw some videos, and they say that Obi-Wan was using the Form 3 Sorosu's lightsaber style, which is more defensive, and Anakin was using the Form 7 Juyo, which is more attacking. Mm. And you remember that beautiful sweep with the lightsaber that Anakin did, and Obi-Wan just jumped out in time, And like the look on his face was just like, "Ooh, you actually nearly got me that time."
Yeah, you're getting pretty aggressive there, buddy.
But then I did think he learned something, because when Obi-Wan was disarmed, he was fighting Anakin with no lightsaber, and it was just blocks and punches and hits, not with the Force. But then I think that might have mirrored was what we saw with Vader later on,
when he was
doing that. Yeah,
yeah. I felt like they were both. They were both pulling from those memories, and I think that's why these flashbacks were so important, and so, you know, they just made them that much better. There were things,
and it
that
wasn't
we
just
to
fan
see.
Service,
right? Exactly, but you know, it moved the plot forward. It made sense that
gave structure to the episode, and so
well placed and meaningful. Yeah. Usually flashbacks are just that, but these were perfect.
Mm. And there was another thing where Anakin was beating down on Obi-Wan, and I read that and it's true. I saw the video of it. It mirrored the moment where Luke was beating down on Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi.
In Return,
And but instead of whereas Anakin was going all the way to the end until Obi-Wan came out, you know, Luke, still in touch with, you know, in touch with the light side, turned off his lightsaber and stopped the aggressiveness.
Yeah. So was this episode, I don't want to say mirrored, but, you know, kind of follows in the footsteps of which movie? Was it Empire Strikes Back? Is that the one? Because I read somewhere, or I think we actually discussed it, that each one of these episodes is kind of
drawing, felt like
a mirror to the prequels and the
original from one of the
series.
Major motion pictures.
Yeah.
I think, if anything, it would be Empire. You know, they have a big battle, you know.
But you're right. Vader. Remember the point I wanted to make was when they finally get into the rebel base, Vader is striding down those hallways. And if they had been made of ice, it would have been a replica of the shot of when he got into Hoth, you know?
Yeah.
And and Luke and Vader fight and Vader is just so much more powerful and plays around with them, throwing crates at him and here he's just humiliating her with his skills.
Well, this is a little bit off topic, but I'm starting to struggle with my morality here, because I'm like, why do we like Vader so much? He's not a nice guy.
Oh, because he's super cool. I think that's
he's mean. He kills little kids and stuff. It's like, give me more.
There's no good guys without the bad guys. There's no story without an antagonist and a protagonist. And if you're going to have an antagonist, let's have the most badass antagonist.
Exactly.
That's a big part of it, sure.
Yeah,
I mean, he's always the top, you know, bad guy of all time. You know, you put a list of the
greats.
He's
the greatest villain of all time.
He's always he's number one.
In every aspect, I suppose, right?
Because he's so formidable, you know?
Yeah.
He is. He's so powerful. But then also, I know for me, it's like at the end, he kind of goes back to, maybe I was wrong. You know, it doesn't really make up for all the stuff he did, but it's like...
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. He did a lot of bad things in life to get a sudden, like a deathbed forgiveness.
Well, that's what he does, right?
Yeah. And as Jason said last week, imagine if he survived and goes, let's not just change our minds so much. I kind of like being in control of the whole universe.
Right.
Yeah. But luckily he died and now he's a good Force ghost.
Yeah. I find myself, too, always looking at whenever they do close-ups on like his helmet, or even just his body, you know, it's like, what's he doing in there? What's he thinking?
Right.
What if he didn't, you know, what if Kenobi didn't chop him up, you know, and he had to be in that suit? That would be a completely different character.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my mom and I were talking about, you know, when she took me to see the, Star Wars and, you know, all the amazing moments. But, you know, one of them for sure is when he steps into that, you know, into that ship and we see this guy with a mask and breathing and choking people and
picks up a guy by his neck,
by his throat,
and then you just hear the neck snap. And I was 10 years old and I'm like going, oh my God,
what happened?
Keep an eye on this guy.
Yeah. Tosses him against the wall and then strides down the hallway.
Right.
Yeah.
His breathing.
Yeah.
I noticed in this episode when he was taking down the ship, when he had a hold of the ship with the force and he was bringing it down, his breathing never even accelerated.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a good point.
Still perfectly calm, you know. So like, no beating this guy.
Well, next week, I think it has to happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to make that line in Star Wars make more sense when he finally meets up with Obi-Wan and he says, you know, I was the student.
The student. And
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now I'm the master.
So we have to get to that point,
Because I think he has to lose, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting how we're trying to retcon, you know, just probably just throwaway lines from when it was written in 1977. You
right.
know? And like one line, you know, the Rogue One was from one line in the original series. A whole movie is spawned from it. And now we're, you know, again, we're talking about it as if it was history, but, you know, but that's what's so fun about it.
I think that's what the writers do, right? I mean, I think they're like us, and we're sitting around in the writer's room going, hey, what if we focus on this?
right.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool if...
right. Yep. Maybe with a little help from some reefer, you know? Oh, this would be really cool!
Maybe.
That's funny.
Well, you guys got any other notes or anything else we want to talk about?
Let's see.
The bridge of the Star Destroyer.
Oh, that was amazing. And then the shots from again, going back to my favorite classic wide shots, was when they launched the fighters into the planet and you see the Star Destroyer floating above the planet. It's just like all Star Wars goodness, you know, it's, they really are just dipping into it and not fan servicing, but doing a Star Wars film or a Star Wars show, you know?
Right.
A
lot of familiarity. It had that film feel.
A lot of familiarity, And it was different this time. And they didn't go so much to the shaky cam as we discussed the other week. Yeah, it was much more set and set on well-framed things without the movement, except when they went into the attack on the rebel stronghold. Yeah. Suddenly we've got a camera right up into Reva's face and you're riding in amongst it, So it did feel like that fog of war, which I thought really worked really well.
Right. Did you feel it was more cinematic this time? I remember you were talking about how it felt more episodic.
Yeah, very much so. I thought that there was not a massive change, but a noticeable change. And I think that might even just be budget, you know. I think, you know, they have a set budget for six episodes, and they tend to, you know, like Game of Thrones did, they tend to keep it all for the finales and the big battles at the end.
Right.
Yeah, they do that in Star Trek, too. They call them bottle episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But should we talk about the other thing we could talk about was the actual attack of moving down that hallway, because it was really good to see
especially
the Ilaria Sands sacrifice.
Yeah.
And it was actually quite emotional when the droid, another one of my theories out the window, who I thought was actually a person. When the droid kind of went into protection mode and was taking all the blasters and then
like shielding her,
And then she touches the blood, and for a second I thought that that was the blood from the droid. Thus concluding my theory.
You're like, oh,
it was not.
And that, you know, that mirrored Rogue One, you know, with the bot there and giving them, you know, emotions and giving them feeling and it was emotional, right? I mean, he
really
was protecting her and he never said anything, right?
He's just a droid.
Yeah.
But I thought that Kenobi again with the, because when they open the door, and that was another beautiful moment when she sliced open the door and Kenobi just does a classic force push and pushes back them all, and sort of, so he does have Jedi powers, and then I'm like, she's in trouble, she's isolated all those stormtroopers bearing down on her. And I'm like, just grab her with the Force or ignite your lightsaber. That, you know, that right. kid's up. They can run away, you know. But it would have taken away a beautiful moment of self-sacrifice, which I think is very Star Wars, except for Finn and Finn when he was driving into the thing and he got saved.
That's true, yeah. Does happen a lot in Star Wars, self-sacrifice.
And we got to see a cool thermal detonator.
Oh,
he's holding the thermal detonator.
Yeah.
Everybody fall back!
And then for a split second, she sets it off and there was a single frame of the energy just coming out of the line around the center of it as it was just starting to explode.
Was very cool. Yeah.
That's cool. The other thing I found amusing was the matching color palette of the rebels and the refugees. They're all in a certain browns and greens and a very nice kind of beaten down refugee color palette.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is classic. What did you think of Leia saving the day?
Oh, that, you know what? I did have a think on that. I was like, why doesn't that happen more often where, you know, the Empire or the Rebellion, you know, hacks a robot? There's right. so much technology in yeah. Star Wars. It's like, it's kind of like what we're doing here on Earth. You know, China hacks the U.S., U.S. hacks the Russians yeah. hack, you know.
You would think at some point, just like, you know, having a delete button on the communicators that before a ship comes into a secret dock, that they would somehow scan it for tracking
right.
devices. I mean, yeah.
You think it'd be a thing.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Digital warfare, right?
Exactly,
or at least
right?
notice that its eyes have gone from blue to red.
right.
Right.
Is this thing evil? Its eyes are suddenly red.
I thought it was funny that... that Bracken, you know, he's the engineer guy and he has to fix this gate and he, you know, if he doesn't, they're all going to die. But then they say, well, is there a problem up in that, you know, in that tube?
Well, look at me. You want me to go up there? Yeah. Or we're going to die.
Yeah. You know, what do you expect me to do? Go up
right,
there?
Fix it? Like you would think.
Yeah, because we're all about to die. Maybe you just
right.
squeeze in, sucking your
right,
gut.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then
I mean,
she gets
Leia
in there, and
something.
it's like a studio apartment with wine.
Right, exactly.
It was pretty big. Huh?
I mean, it was a little silly, but she had to do something.
Yeah, but again, with this episode, all those things are just Star Wars-y things. Movie's
right.
got a movie because all the mm-hmm. awesomeness was so much better. And even a sighting of a bowcaster with that guy used
yep.
was
right,
super
yeah.
satisfying. You know?
That was one of my Easter eggs, yeah, seeing Bracken use the famous Wookiee bowcaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, back to that... little robot. What was it called? Little battery.
Lola.
Lola. Right?
Lola. Yeah.
I think it was called marketing device.
Yep. Right. Merchandising. Huh?
Merchandising. Thank you.
Leia and her new arch nemesis Lola. There. That had to be probably the cutest fight ever in Star Wars. Right. It's like no, stop. Oh, what's this? Restraining bolt. Doop. Okay. All fixed. Yay.
Blue eyes.
Yeah. That was pretty good, though. It was fun to watch that.
It was good, yeah. Look, I have zero complaints about this episode for a change.
It was, you know, it was cool to see Leia being Leia and continuing yeah. to be Leia, right? You know, she kind of takes command and says, "I'm going up there," and it was cool to see Obi-Wan back her in that decision.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true, that's true. And online there was a lot of, like, how does she know how to kind of, like, fix things like this? And then someone pointed out, you know, Anakin was building C-3PO when he was about the
yeah.
same age.
Right.
So they have they're just kind of genius, Jedi geniuses,
right.
you know.
It's like our kids today using cell phones and computers.
That's
right?
true.
You ever seen a 2-year-old just naturally start moving a mouse around on a computer?
It's
completely
bizarre,
natural for them.
Yeah.
You don't even have to teach them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it seemed like all she did was move some wires around. It wasn't like she was like tinkering or fixing. She was just like, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Here. So peering through, and then she's like, is this it?
It's in the round hole.
But again, just like you said, all these little, you know, annoyances or whatever you want to call them were overshadowed by, by all the Star Warsy goodness.
And another amusing one was like, how long is it going to how long is it going to take to fix the, you know, the opening? He's like, 3 hours. And Obi-Wan goes, in classic Star Trek fashion, you've got one hour.
You've got an hour. One. Right.
Got one.
Yeah. I cannot do it, Captain.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Yeah, that was classic, huh?
Yeah.
So do you guys feel that Kenobi's like back at strength? Do you think he's back full strength? I mean, he was kind of take charge Mr. General Kenobi this time.
Yeah, almost all the way for me. Like he's almost right there. And of course, kind of age comes into it. But he's not his young self. But deflecting those blaster bolts in the attack was full Kenobi. But I still am waiting for the glint in his eye. You know, the confidence to come back.
Right,
because he still seems every shot, a close up of Ewan McGregor is one of angst and fear, and you know, one episode to go. So you know, I don't want to count it out again. That the end, he might. I want one quip, just one quip.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, you know, like when a soldier's trained for battle.
Yeah,
you don't realize your potential, you know, but then you're in battle and you rely on your training. Yeah, that's what it feels like with him right now. He's just like falling back on all the stuff he knows, but he's not really in the zone. You know, I want to see him like remember Neo in the Matrix when he like flexes and everything around him bends. You know, it's like that's the Kenobi I want to see.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, again, you know, just as much as I want to see Vader kick ass, I want to see Ben as well, and I'm hoping we get it. You know, we've seen these glimpses, or not glimpses, but you know, when he's used the Force in the first couple episodes, he struggled and he had to really concentrate. Whereas this episode, it seemed like they were all coming right back. You know, he Force pushes Reva, he's whipping out his lightsaber and he's doing his thing. He's blocking shots and I think we're ready. You know, we're ready.
Ready for that one fist pumping moment.
He has the eyes. Yeah! The eyes aren't there.
The eyes aren't there. He still seems very traumatized, and as one would. But you know, but I think that I still hope there's a moment coming where we just see a glimpse of the old Obi-Wan.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, like you said, Rich, you know, he took command of that whole situation, and you know, I think many of the people there knew him. You know, Baraka, you know, knew him as general.
Yeah.
So no one questioned, right? Yeah. No one questioned his leadership.
His authority.
Like, you guys go there. And they're like, okay. Right.
And they're even kind of looking at him, you know, give him the side eye going, are you going to do something?
and his speech was almost inspiring at the end.
Right.
Like, you know, it was like, I'm just waiting for that one line where everyone's kind of goes, cheers, but everyone goes, yeah, okay, you're right. We'll go and go and defend the things, and I guess we can do it. You know?
Take charge, Kenobi. Well, at least we have the beginnings of what we want to see.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. So I was just thinking about Kenobi there, assuming. Remember, there was that scene where he was saying, no, you're not, Vader's, I'm bringing him to see you. Wait, what did he say?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm bringing him to you, right?
Because you're not bringing him to me. I'm bringing him to you.
Yeah, that was a great line. And then, you know, she kind of thinks about it for a second, and then she turns around and says, all right, motions for two stormtroopers to put them back in the hideout.
Yeah,
you know,
that was another.
She had to do that on purpose, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's what I think. On further reflection, that she is clearly giving him an opportunity to escape.
Yeah, because I'm like, that's dumb. Two stormtroopers with it. You know,
and we'll just close the door. I'm sure nothing will happen.
No, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just want some sharks with laser beams on their freaking heads. Everything's gonna go to plan, right?
Yeah. You know, I didn't think of that she did that intentionally, but it makes sense, right? I mean, it makes sense that she was kind of conflicted, and I felt, you know, with her backstory that I felt that she didn't want those kids to, you know, to be massacred again or any of the people. And, you know, she knew the fight was between, you know, her and Vader and him.
Yeah, I think Obi-Wan did get to her when he said, "Are you going to let this happen again?"
Yeah.
And that was the moment that when she realized, like, now is the moment. If I am going to make my move, then now is the moment.
Yeah, right. Vader will be focused on Kenobi.
Mm.
So I have one question. Like, was the Grand Inquisitor just hanging outside, just waiting for his moment? He's like, "I'm going to come in there and I'm going to totally get her.
Yeah.
I'm going to rub it in her face."
Dun, dun, dun.
And how long had he been back? I mean, he must have prepped Vader.
Yeah, she's standing outside waiting.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, "Oh, come on. What time are we supposed to get on with this, Vader?"
I remember for my grandmother's birthday, I was living overseas and my mum flew back to surprise her. But in waiting to surprise her, I spent 2 hours in a back room with some other surprise guy, and we just sat there talking to each other, waiting and waiting and waiting. So I imagine that the General Inquisitor is in some side room kind of having coffee, you know, checking his phone. Yeah. Oh, I'll be ready yet? Yep. No, a couple of...
No, not yet.
Right. Just buying time. Bring me some spice.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you've seen him in Rebels, he's no slouch.
No.
He can take his own. And
yeah, absolutely.
He's a Grand Inquisitor. No,
he's
for
a great character. I look forward to more from him. Yeah, absolutely.
So is he like a full-blown Sith?
No.
But he's pretty good.
I mean, I don't think any of them are.
There are only two.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they hold their own, and together they are, you know, all... Well, as many as there are, they're formidable.
Mm.
I mean,
it's interesting
in the Clone Wars,
the numbers now of Force users from the Inquisitors to, like, all those children in the with the refugees. They were all Force using children, as far as I understand.
Yeah. Force sensitive, yeah.
Force sensitive, yeah.
Yeah.
So
the good point. Yeah.
So it's interesting the numbers that are out there. You know,
I wonder if that is like the beginnings of the rebellion.
Yeah,
because there really isn't an official rebellion yet, right?
Mm-mm.
Right. Yeah. No. It absolutely is. Right. I mean, the time we see old Leia or older Leia,
right.
You know, it has already formed.
It's already full blown resistance. Yeah.
We get to see Rogue One. And we can kind of see its formation. But
so then, with all
these
escaping Jedis, and then there was an interesting thing of the box of lightsabers. Now, were they lightsabers left behind by Jedis that had escaped, or were they from dead Jedis?
Mm. Eric?
I'm thinking they're left behind. That's my take. I know that I've watched a couple of the YouTubers that cover this show, and no one could figure out if any of those belonged
to
someone
specific.
Oh,
really? Yeah.
So
someone
that's
will.
My
Give
guess.
Them a couple more days.
Yeah, exactly. Huh? My guess is that they left them behind.
But
it would have been pretty difficult.
So is this canon breaking then? I'm just thinking of this now. Because I thought it was a nice scene with the robes and the lightsabers giving, you know, making Obi-Wan rethink everything. But if there are all these Force users and ex-Jedis out in the universe, does that undermine the importance of Luke as the last hope?
Right. Well, I think Luke was just like supposed to be like unofficially maybe the chosen one. The most powerful
right.
one.
Oh, okay, right.
You know,
right
plus,
right.
he's
yeah. well, I mean, Anakin,
offspring. So,
right?
Yeah,
he kind of got it.
Anakin was thought to have been.
Yeah, because we never got their midichlorian numbers, did we?
No. Not supposed to say that word. Jason's going to get mad.
Yeah, it's banned. Yeah,
Jason's
you're out.
Here. Yeah, he didn't like that plot point.
No.
Well, the only other note I had was. Qui-Gon Jinn. I haven't seen him yet.
Still not here.
That's true.
Still
think he'll show up?
He has to.
Yeah.
I think that's another... I mean, I don't know. I mean, we definitely have to see Obi-Wan become, you know...
Become Obi-Wan.
One,
yeah.
Right? One with the Force where he's not struggling. He's not second-guessing. You know, we theorized that that was the reason that he wasn't able to communicate with Qui-Gon and.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, we're
because he's lost touch with the Force, and maybe that's why he's not communicating with Qui-Gon. And through these latest adventures or trials, mm-hmm. he's slowly getting mm-hmm. in touch with it, and slowly getting up to full power. So maybe after this latest encounter, that he will be up to full power and be able to liaise with Qui-Gon Jinn.
Right, which is exactly what he would need.
I think my new theory is that he, you know, this next episode is going to show him, you know, finally get to communicate and maybe he can ask the question, you know, what should I do with Vader?
Right.
Should I kill him? Should I not? And you know, maybe we'll see Liam come in and say,
Liam,
you have a very certain set of skills.
Yeah. Kick his ass.
That was funny. Another point was it was really great to see the clone troopers, live action clone troopers. There was one dead and there was in their uniforms, in their armor. And then there was a whole squad of them coming in behind Anakin at the end. It was great to see the live action version of the clone troopers.
Were those the guys that were in the black armor?
No, those are the guys with that were in white with the blue decal.
Oh, yeah. The 501st.
Oh, when the 501st.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And it was one of the ones that we saw, you know, destitute.
Yes.
On that other planet, right? It was, and again, you know, with the current stormtroopers' aim.
Yeah.
You would think that they would keep some of the clones on.
Yeah, right. Just a couple for training purposes.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we watched the clone troopers, and they were pretty damn efficient. You know, they were running around kicking butt, they're like, you guys can go away.
That was an executive decision that didn't work out, huh? We should have kept the droids.
Yep. right.
Well, you got any callbacks? Yeah, or anything, Eric?
I have a handful of little Easter eggs. I mean, they're not nearly as wow as the, you know, Vader fight and Reva and all that. Just little ones, like you know, we mentioned Roken with the bowcaster. Mm-hmm. We got to see some Trandoshans. You know, as the refugees, and they're, you know, putting their heads together, and I think that was just a good moment where you can kind of feel their fear and tensions. We got to see, if anybody is a fan of the video game Fallen Order, the two black troopers, or I think there was two, that led the charge. They're called Purge Troopers, and they're like kind of like the right hand of the Inquisitors.
Yeah.
In the game, you get to fight a handful of those guys, and they're pretty formidable, which is cool.
And that did seem very Fallen Order when Vader pulled off the fuselage of the ship. Mm-hmm. You know, those Force powers.
Oh, yeah.
Very video game, which I loved.
One of the YouTube channels that I watch, it's Heavy Spoilers. He pointed out that one of the kids that were with Reva is possibly the kid that's in that hyper, you know, the in the
oh in the tank suspended
animation. Yeah, he had the same outfit, same kind of look.
Yeah,
so that makes it even a little more eerie and creepy.
Well, unfortunately, that made me laugh when I saw it. And so, like the helmets are poorly designed.
Yeah. They mentioned a couple planets. They both have a little bit of history in Star Wars. Jabim is a new one,
or
not a new one. I think it might have been mentioned in some deep canons, or I don't even know if it's canon, but some books or something. But Garel, I think Tara mentions Garel, and that there was a handful of Clone Wars episodes that planet showed up in.
Who mentioned that?
Tara. You know,
Tara. When she was,
when she was talking about all the, you know, about how.
She was given the speech to Kenobi. Yeah.
Right, right, right. She mentioned that planet and that there was a handful of episodes, not just one, in the Clone Wars. Let's see, other little things like, you know, the sound of the bolt being removed from Layla or Lola or Layla.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Droid was restraining the same
bolt.
Same when Luke was prying at it.
Was it? That's good.
A little
attention to detail. Attention to detail.
Yeah, yeah, all that little kind of stuff.
Yeah, very important that.
Yeah.
Speaking of sound, when Vader was walking through the corridors to get to the landing bay, they were playing the Imperial March.
Right. Yeah. 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 The music was awesome in this one.
Oh man!
Yeah. Like it gave me chills. To finish. Yeah. Absolutely. Like and I know it's not John Williams, but the woman that's doing it is doing such a great job. It's really very, very Star Wars, and it's perfect. I have zero complaints, even though I'm a massive fan of the John Williams score. I think they've done a really great interpretation of it.
It seemed like they were taking elements from, you know, all the themes that we know and incorporating it to kind of something new. You know, there was definitely elements of the Imperial March and all these other ones that we know and love.
Yeah, it hits the same beat. But slightly different.
But it was slightly different, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. That's got to be hard to do.
Just
expand on something like that without making it too super obvious, you know?
But what an opportunity to you know, to be a composer and then say, would you like to write some new Star Wars music?
Right. <Yeah. laughs> You know, it would just be like your friend, right? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And one of the other thoughts I had was, which I was slightly disappointed about, was when we saw the box of lightsabers and I'm like, oh, maybe that's going to come back later on. And then you see Obi-Wan give away his blaster and his lightsaber and his communicator to Haja. I thought he was going to come back in and be weaponless and then just reach out with the Force and start dual-wielding several different lightsabers. But no.
Yeah, you would have thought that they would have handed those suckers out.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I mean,
one for you. Right? You get a lightsaber. You get a lightsaber.
I mean, if they're all right, force sensitive, right?
Yeah.
Just skip the training.
It's a missed opportunity.
Good point. That's funny.
Any other Easter eggs?
Yeah, as for the, one last one, a little one. I think we see the speeders. In the background, the speeders that they used, and from the shot, it kind of looked a little
in the hangar
from Hoth. Yeah, yeah.
I know when Vader landed, you could see the shuttle Tidarian behind him.
Oh yes, exactly.
Oh, okay.
His go-to transport, which I have several models of. love that ship.
If you could see him right now, he's surrounded by models.
Yeah, you can see in the background.
Oh, and I've got one. The sunken control area on the Imperial ships.
Yeah.
I thought they did this shot from above, and all the guys are looking up in their little sunken control areas. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, that was a great replica.
Yeah.
The Devastator, I think that's his name.
Is that the name of the ship? Yeah, nice. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of funny at, you know, as they're escaping. That the hyperdrive is broken. Where's R2?
Right.
They need R2.
Yeah, exactly. But that kicks off the next episode because surely Vader's, just Star Destroyer is right there, you know?
It has to open up with them hot on their tails.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to bring them aboard of capture.
We haven't. Yeah, we haven't really seen much. Like, I mean, not that I'm itching for this with this series per se, but there hasn't been a lot of space stuff.
Hopefully there's an asteroid field.
Right, right.
Successfully navigating an asteroid field. Yeah. Or an ice planet or Dagobah. Somewhere nearby, right?
But no salt planet, please.
Not that this is an Easter egg, I read that there's rumors that they're filming season 2.
Season 2.
I mean, nothing is official, but you know, it has the show has been getting a lot of success. It was, I think it was like the most watched new show opening, you know, kind of thing. And any time a show like that gets this kind of popularity, exactly, or attention.
And I'd be totally happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, I even read that there were, again, rumors that they changed the plot around so they can have a season two. So
I heard that too.
Whether
but
those
that's fine.
Rumors come true. But yeah, I'm totally up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was a little disappointed to know that it was just going to be a one shot.
No, especially with only six episodes. Because it's interesting because the upcoming Andor is going to be 12 episodes, a 12 episode series.
Oh, yeah.
Which is going to be brilliant. Long, huh? Yeah.
Wow. Well, Disney, they know how to make money. So
yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, with Disney, they like money. So hopefully we'll be definitely getting in a season two of Kenobi. Or Obi-Wan.
Right. You might have to put up with nobody dying, but at least we get to see Vader kicking some ass. So
exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah, so you guys excited for next week's episode?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. Why do we have to wait?
I know.
But then we get to podcast, you know.
Yeah, right.
We get
right,
to
right,
think
right.
about it. We get to kind of pontificate and theories. Theorize. Yeah.
They should release the penultimate and the final episode together.
That's true. Yeah. Nice use of penultimate.
That's from podcasting.
That's true.
All right. Well, we'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us. No one means to have all that power. The clock's ticking. I just count the hours. Stop tripping. I'm tripping off the power. Till then, that's the world's hours. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We have some listener feedback. Steve Barr writes in, this episode redeemed the series, and this episode was also better than the sequels. Side effects of this episode may include elevated heart rate, fist pumping, and desire to watch the episode again.
Yep.
Yeah, I went straight in and watched it straight away afterwards for sure.
Yeah, me too.
And anything's better than the sequels.
I hadn't finished it. I unfortunately had to stop it. And Rich and I met up for lunch.
Oh, no.
And he was like, dude, I stopped it right when Reva and Obi-Wan were talking through
the door.
Through the wall.
Well, I suppose that's a good place to stop.
Right,
stop.
Yeah. I went back and then Rich immediately texted me like, we had a little conversation about that. But Gijo Perthia, I hope I pronounced that right. It was good. Nice to see all the things we suspected come together. Really enjoyed some of the flashbacks that we had not seen before, especially Obi-Wan versus Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Sophia Smith, holy amazeballs. I don't want to give anything away, but that scene with the cargo ship, mind-blowing. There's a series of emojis. The motherfucking power. I rewind again just for that part. This was a hella good episode. The importance of dropping that device, I think I figure out why. So good.
Absolutely. Matthew Rimmer, epic action. The storming of the base was tense and well staged. I enjoyed the flashbacks. Good to see Hayden Christensen properly.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how and when we would. Didn't see the twists coming. Special mention to Indira Varma, who was great in everything she's in. Game of Thrones, Torchwood, etc. She really made Talos stand out.
Yeah, she'll be missed. She was a great character, I thought.
Yeah. It was sad that she had to die.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone gets stabbed with lightsabers and lives, but unfortunately,
shot with a blaster and she's gone.
Yep, you're done.
But she had a heroic ending, so that's good.
Right, that's good.
Yeah.
Barbie Allen writes, each episode gets better and better. Love the Reva Youngling reveal. Made the poignant moment that for that character, and I should have anticipated Vader knew exactly who she was. Looking forward to what happens to her and how Luke enters the picture. Also, love how smart and capable little Leia is. I was afraid she'd be startled by Lola and topple off the ladder. Nope. She recovered quickly, identified the problem, and fixed it.
Winky face.
Perfect.
Yep, winky face.
And it's my honor to read a comment from Rima Joe. I can't believe it's 2022 and we get Hayden Christensen playing Anakin again. It's everything. Ewan McGregor says so much with his facial expressions. He is brilliant. Love the tie-in with humanization of droids, same as Rogue One. That broke me. Made me very sad too. Vader is a predator that plays with his prey. Love that we get that scary side. I didn't think I'd see anything better than the Vader hallway scene in Rogue One, but this show is rivaling it. Can't wait for the finale.
Well said.
Couldn't agree more.
Very nice. Nathan Eshelman, seeking Anakin again made me tear up a little. Oh, I'm sorry, not seeking. Seeing Anakin again made me tear up a little. I was 11 years old when Attack of the Clones came out, and seeing my favorite character again 20 years later really made me reminisce about how far I've come since the days of playing with lightsabers in my yard.
Yeah, right.
I've also loved seeing how terrifying Darth Vader can be. I think over the years, you kind of get used to seeing him as an action figure, so it's nice to feel the intensity of his presence when he's on screen. Yeah.
Very much so.
Does it, is it a problem that I still play with lightsabers?
Or figurines?
Yeah, not so much those. I might have some, maybe.
Yeah, I still need to get a lightsaber. I think I'll wait for my visit to Disneyland to have the whole
experience. Yeah, you got to do it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's nice, worth the $250, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Let's see. Alex Baelish. Yeah. This has to be one of the heartbreaking episodes and moments of all Star Wars. The cost of the Clone Wars took a toll on many people in so many ways. I'm not going to lie, I did not care for the third sister Reva at first. She reminded me of a know-it-all teenager, but learning her secrets made me cry. To think she was a youngling, it really makes so much sense. Her asking Obi-Wan, "Where were you?" was such a devastating moment. If you combine it with the lightsaber fight from the past, in the background, they have always played cat and mouse. I love how Leia saves the day and how strong Vader has become and how in the end, everyone is a pawn to Vader.
We all love
For
Vader.
Sure. Yep.
We're all pawns to Vader.
Exactly. Alicia Stout. I thought the episode was just meh. There were some great Star Wars-y parts, but others were pretty hard to believe. I think what really did it for me was the flashback to Obi-Wan and Anakin training with the lightsaber. You would think with all the technology we have and the age reversing they did for Luke and Boba Fett, Mandalorian, they would be able to try to make Anakin look a little younger or maybe give him some Botox injections. LOL. LOL. By the way, Ewan McGregor ages very well. Winky face, fire.
He did look younger than Anakin.
Yeah, no, he looked good.
He did.
It worked kind of well for him, though.
Well, Alicia, I suggest you watch it again. After listening to
just squint your eyes a little bit. Yeah. Those parts. Squint your eyes.
suspend the disbelief. Mike Mulcahy writes, so we've got just one episode left, and it still has the chance to do something really cool with Obi-Wan and Vader and really surprise the audience. Yep. But I can't help but feel the show has been just a little too Disney for me thus far, and certain creative decisions by the writing department have been questionable in my opinion, and that makes me nervous. Can't help but compare the writing to Stranger Things, having just watched that, and man, I wish the writers sweat the details on Obi-Wan the way they do on that show. On a positive note, seeing Vader in live action again has been pretty magical. If not even a little nostalgia blinding at times, but let's be honest, we're all here for it. Here's crossing my fingers for a great and narratively satisfying ending, and hopefully one that guest stars Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Yeah, it has to. Right.
Yes, I hope our love for Vader came through on this episode.
Right. Let's see, Nick Poblocki writes, Bail Organa. Worst voicemail lever ever.
Exactly.
That is for sure.
He's like the guy that spoils the plot.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right. We have a couple of calls. This is Sam Willis.
Hi, guys. Just thought I'd start off saying love the podcast. And I love this episode. The only thing that got me during this episode was the stormtroopers how on earth they can justify they're really that bad at shooting when they were, what, 4 to 8 feet close next to the people they're shooting at. It just, yeah, it just looked ridiculous. If I was the Emperor, obviously we know now, he keeps the Stormtroopers. I'd have probably gone back to droids or clones. Love the podcast anyway. Keep it up. Hopefully next week's as epic as this week. Thanks.
Yeah, that, I couldn't agree more. That was a little bit point blank for them to be missing.
It's kind of, you know, it's kind of funny to keep kind of playing that.
Yeah, it's just an in-joke at this time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We have another call from Anwen from New Zealand.
Hey, guys. The show is continuing to smash it out of the park. I'm really enjoying it so much. Is this the most Vader that we've seen in all of the movies combined, just in this TV show? It's so great. I love the flashback with Anakin and realizing that's how we get to see Hayden's face and not just in the back to tank all shriveled up behind Vader mask. The sequence and how they tie that in together with the current happenings was fantastic. Do you think James Earl Jones could have even imagined 45 years ago that he'd be still voicing Darth Vader? It's pretty amazing. And I guess my Leia was right that Reva did get kicked out of the squad. I'm just fascinated to see what is going to happen next with the information that she's got now. I really loved that Vader kind of almost honoured her as a warrior by letting her fight him a little bit, even though it's like a cat playing with a mouse. It was really cool to see. Keep up the great work. Can't wait for the finale.
Yeah, and I think this is the most Vader we've seen in you know, compared to the whole series.
For sure.
And I must say that he is very Vader. I have zero complaints about how they're presenting Vader in this series. I think he's perfect and on point in every way.
Yeah, you just want more of it.
Yep. Okay, now we're joined by Tux, who played a Jedi in the prequels. So hello, Tux, and welcome to the podcast. How are you,
welcome,
mate?
Hello, Johnny.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, guys.
Tux. We have a real Jedi.
There you go.
That is the coolest name ever, by the way, Tux.
Oh, thank you.
That could have been your Jedi name.
Yeah, that does sound like a Jedi name.
You know.
I was very thrilled when I found out that Tux was going to be in the Star Wars films. As you know, you all know, we are longtime fans. So, Tux, just to let us know how that came about.
Okay. Well, it was an interesting kind of beginning. I you know, being a Star Wars fan myself and living in Sydney, hearing that they were coming to film episodes of Star Wars or some of the films here way back in the late 90s, I think they started.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody wanted to be on Star Wars. Like, you know,
yeah, for sure.
I had an agent at the time and they actually got me on the film, the Attack of the Clones, as an extra, just a simple extra in the scene where Obi-Wan goes to a cafe to try and find the source of the poison dart that was shot at Princess Leia. So rolled up to Fox Studios, you know, pitch black still, you know, 4 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning. Went through the process of wardrobe and makeup and, you know, sat on a sound stage for like literally 16 hours and didn't get a look in, didn't get on set and you know, crushed, devastated.
Life of an extra.
Yeah, totally. And
look, were you dressed as agent, or were you a different character at that point?
Just an extra, fill in screen extra.
Gotcha.
You'd be amazed at the amount of people or the caliber of actors that were there just as extras for the day.
Right.
Guys you'd recognize everywhere, and obviously Star Wars fans and just willing to take any part they could get. So 16 hours later, the full day on set, it was dark when I got there, dark when I left, and got nothing. And I was just like crushed. So, you know, go home disappointed. And literally 2 weeks later, my agent rings again and goes, look, what are you doing? And I'm like, in those days, very little. And they said, well, they want to see you at the studio. And I'm like, and in my mind, I thought to myself, no effing way. I'm not going back out there. And, but sure enough, you know, the fan in me thought, look, it could be something. So I went out. First department I went to was Creatures, and they tried a prosthetic on my forehead, and they were like, oh, okay. And then the guy went to the phone and called somebody at the end of the phone and said, look, it fits in. And they're like, oh, great. So, and then they turned around and said to me, at the time I had an afro, and they said, look, would you cut your hair off if you got this role? And I was like, you know, and then in those days you just do anything for anything. So it was like, yep, no problem. I could do that. And so they go, okay, you need to go to wardrobe now. And I'm like, okay. So over to another shed at the studio and roll up to the wardrobe girls, and I say, hi, I just got sent over from Creatures. And they go, yeah, no, we know. Okay, just go in and try that costume on in that dressing room. I'm like, and I look over, and there's this Jedi's outfit. And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
So go in.
And was there a glowing light? And a sound going,
exactly. That's exactly how it was. And, you know, I went over and tried it on, and it fit. And they're like, yeah, it fits you, no problem. We can do a bit of this, bit of that. You know, and the full garb, like the undergarment, which is like that kind of camel kind of pants, yeah, and like the kind of crazy sort of Japanese like top and
robe.
And then you put the robe on and the robe. Then you really feel it. And then they try the belt on with all the kind of stuff and the you know, the lightsaber. And so,
yeah, great.
That was the beginning of that whole, you know, journey.
Fantastic. And then you told me that you then went into kind of 6 hours of makeup, I imagine, to get all the prosthetics on, and were sitting in the Creatures room, and you had a couple of guests sit by you.
Now the Creatures the Creatures thing is a whole ordeal in its own. I mean, the prosthetics and all the stuff they do, it does. The first time it took like hours and hours. They did perfect it as time went by, you know, narrowed it down to two or three. But my guy had like this kind of samurai kind of long black hair kind of stuff. And then I had to go to the hair department for that. And I was sitting in the hair department. Sat down. 2 seconds later, Natalie Portman sits beside me, and you know, she's in the costume where she's like in the arena that we shot, like the scene that we shot. She's in this costume that's already been sort of torn open across her chest, and so you know, she's
you're like, hello.
That's like, yeah. On top of becoming a Jedi, you get to sit next to her.
Totally.
Sitting next to a scantily clad Natalie Portman.
And so I'm sort of, you know, doing the etiquette thing where, you know, she's a principal, don't look at it, don't, you know, look away, don't look them in the eye. And she's literally kind of waving at me going, hello, you know. And so I'm like, some kind of prosthetic hair. I'm already kind of costumed up. And she's like, wow, you look amazing. I'm like, I just thought to myself, wow, you look so much more amazing than I do. And so she was just really friendly, like super friendly girl, and just really, really nice and polite. And then,
sorry to interrupt, but that's because you're in that scene in Attack of the Clones where all the Jedi's land and you were part of like the full Jedi attack, weren't you?
We're on a rescue mission to rescue Anakin and Leah from
Mace. Was that the big scene in the arena?
Yes.
That was cool.
That was crazy.
Where all the lightsabers were lit up and they were all running with the different colors.
That was amazing.
Going crazy in there. That was an amazing scene. Like they obviously shot that in two bits. They had the first unit that shot, you know, Sam Jackson and you know, Hugh McGregor and Natalie Portman and Christian and everybody, and then they obviously then did a second unit part of that where they had other guys. They actually grabbed an Aikido school from Byron Bay to come down and
oh right
fill in as other Jedis. And yeah, it was like, it was incredible. It was like, you know, the whole thing was surreal.
That's cool. Did they give you any like choreography, or did they just be like, go out swinging?
Well, the fight master, a great guy, Pete, I can't think of his last name. He's just incredible. He actually, is it Pete or Ian? It's been so many years. He was just like, because I sort of had, I do internal kung fu. I'm like a sifu for kung fu and internal kung fu. And I'd sort of been a full contact martial artist by then for quite a few years. So he kind of had just sort of, we started up and he gave a little instruction. And then when he saw that some of us knew what we were doing, he just went, man, just do your thing, do whatever you feel.
Just do your thing.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's all blue screen and, you know.
And so you're on the big blue screen with a bunch of other Jedi all kind of like doing their thing. Oh, that must have been great.
Were you holding like a lightsaber or what? I mean, was it just like a sword?
Well, this is the thing. They have, you know, a number of stunt kind of sabers that you have. Some are full length. And because it's all CGI, it's like a green end that they then obviously superimpose the saber, sort of glowing saber sword to. And then they have a half one, and just, you know, depending on the scene. Yeah, you just literally got to play around with this thing and, you know, twirl it around, and every childhood memory of any lightsaber kind of technique. You just,
and I'm sure you didn't care that it was 16 hours or 20 hours at that point.
Not at that point.
All of that was like, you know, it's like I could be here all day, you know, for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's cool. And you still have your lightsaber, right?
Yeah. No, well, I don't actually. I have a lightsaber to play with, only because you know, kids. When you run into kids, they just—it's amazing the effect of Star Wars on you know, even adults. I mean, look, everybody.
Sure. You
know, it's like, we're podcasting about it.
Right. I would flip out. no doubt.
Classic. So yeah, I did see quite a like later in the story, really, but you know, ended up going to Skywalker Ranch and, you know, the headquarters of Lucasfilm. And,
oh, wow.
You know, funnily enough, the producer, can't think of his name right now. He actually had like one of the original kind of lightsabers in his office on the mantelpiece with the full kind of setup of the glowing end, or like the glowing sort of sword piece. It was incredible. Ooh. Incredible.
So how many days total were you shooting? Were you on set?
Well, look, I did two of the films. I did Attack of the Clones and Return of the Sith. And we kind of, from memory, Attack of the Clones, I think, was a week with the principal cast. But like a few days, like in between, we didn't shoot. And then another week with the second unit and the arena scene. So it's kind of a couple of weeks, really.
Right on.
And so take us through your epic death scene with the Emperor and Samuel Jackson, or as we like to call him, Sam.
Sam Jackson. Funnily enough, it was funny, that scene, because we shot it originally in Australia, in Sydney at Fox, and then they did some pickups a year later, even. I'm not sure how long it was. And that was in London, in Pinewood Studios, or studio like Pinewood. I can't quite remember. I think it was Pinewood. And then we shot it again at Industrial Light and Magic in San Francisco.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You got to travel the world, too.
Yeah, totally. It was crazy. That part, when we went to San Fran and we stayed at the ranch, and that was kind of, I mean, they did pickups. Like, we were there for a week. They put us into these amazing kind of self-contained apartments that were on the ranch. And
were there actual droids rolling around the ranch, like real droids?
No, funnily enough, I had breakfast with Chewbacca a couple of times. He's a nice guy. Hard to understand. No. But you know, it's funny because the ranch is set up to make film, and you know, they they have an amazing sound stage and studio. Well, it's like a recording studio that fits like a complete orchestra in. And look, they have archives of all the props and everything that they've ever done for all of the films that they've ever done, that that's George Lucas
amazing
ever done. And you know, so that they're just and Industrial Light and Magic, they have Han Solo's spacecraft,
The Millennium Falcon.
The Millennium Falcon sits in one of their studio rooms. like massive Fantastic. Massive model that they obviously had shot, you know, so many times. So yeah, that's just incredible.
So just before we go, like we are doing, of course, the Obi-Wan Kenobi podcast. So you did have sit down with Ewan McGregor as well.
Well, this is the thing. I right after Natalie Portman got out of her chair, Ewan McGregor sits in the chair, and I'm like, oh my goodness, yeah, really?
Jeez.
This is too much. And he exactly like Natalie, like really friendly. Tried like, hey man, you look amazing. Beautiful. Wow, who are you? And blah, blah. It just really, really good guy, like really friendly. And you know, went against all of the you know, the protocols that you get told, you know, don't look at these guys, don't make eye contact, all that sort of stuff.
Oh.
He was really friendly and really, really cool.
Well, he is a Jedi, so you know.
Well, yeah, I saved his life in the arena.
It's always good to hear that you know, movies and stars that you're a big fan of being actually cool.
Yeah, yeah, totally. He was
so that's awesome. Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us, Tux. That was amazing. It's great to have a real Jedi on with us. Look, I'll post the photos on the Facebook pages. And before you go, what was the name of your Jedi? Was there a story behind that?
Well, with Attack of the Clones, I was actually meant to be a stand-in or a substitute for a guy that couldn't come out. And his name was Eeth Koth, and that was the original character that I was meant to play, but because we were so physically different, they decided to create my character Agent Kola from the footage that they saw, and they said, "Look, this guy." And then carried my character over into Return of the Sith, you know, made me. But obviously, the Clone Wars had gone on, raged for years, as they say, and you know, from that day I became a Master Jedi and was on the council for that.
You became a master on the council.
Cool.
That is so cool. Do you have an action figure?
Yes, I do.
It just keeps getting better.
And also a Lego figure as well, you know. Hand in hand.
That's great. I wonder if you were ever featured in the Clone Wars as well in the animated series. Was he really?
He was. Yeah.
I think
I was. Were you asked ever to do anything more? I mean, I saw that your character showed up in the animated series. Would you like voice it at all? Or
No, I didn't.
No.
I didn't. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you never know when you're going to get that call. I was so shocked to get that second call for Return of the Sith. It was just like, wow, okay. This is a thing. So and that went for longer, like that went for weeks and weeks. And like I said, three different countries and just an amazing experience. The San Francisco thing was all about just sort of being kind of brought into the Lucasfilm family and becoming a part of that and learning about the company and how they worked and you know, we were there for a week and we literally shot for half a morning and it was incredible.
That's cool.
Incredible.
And there is something special about Agent Kola, which I read up on during the scene in Attack of the Clones in the Jedi battle. Tux's Padawan gets killed, and so the story goes that he retrieved the Kyber crystal from his lightsaber, added it to his own. So Adrian Collard's lightsaber is the only lightsaber that can turn green or blue, depending on the choice.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
I read that too. That's awesome.
There you go.
Dealer's choice.
Absolutely.
All right, mate. Well, thanks again for joining us, and it was a real pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure. Thank you. Awesome.
Thanks, Tux. Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you guys. So much.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
That was cool.
cool. Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, it just kept getting better and better. I mean, he was like, oh, yeah, it was, you know, they got me into a Jedi. And, oh, yeah, then I went to Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, I got casually. To see the Millennium Falcon. Oh, yeah.
I have an action figure.
Right.
I was at Pinewood Studios, so Sydney, London, right, and San Francisco.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
Next up is Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 6, the final episode.
It'll be bittersweet again.
Bittersweet.
So we're going to be in Hawaii next week, most of us. Except for Jonathan.
Except for me.
Sorry. Yeah.
No. Well, I'm in Bondi Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, that works. That works.
And I expect you all to open the show with Aloha.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The point is, our final episode will be a week or so late. Look for it maybe the day after the 29th or so.
Do it.